Do you think bananas are healthy? Think again. I'm Dr. Stephen Gundry, best-selling author of the Plant Paradox series, and on the Dr. Gundry podcast, you're going to learn the foods to eat and the ones to avoid to lose weight, boost your energy, and feel your most vibrant, active self this year. You'll also learn simple tips from the world's top experts on health and nutrition. Plus, you'll discover the truth about calories, how running could actually be hurting your health, and why fat won't make you fat. Subscribe now to the Dr. Gundry podcast on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. Because I'm Dr. Gundry, and I'm always looking out for you.
Perhaps you feel down or off or not entirely yourself. Easy to blame what's going on in the world and the news. But some of your negative feelings may actually be caused by gut problems. Serotonin, of course, is a chemical that's important for mood, and about 90% of the serotonin in our body is found in our gut. This means that if your gut health is off, you may not feel as, well, positive as you normally do. When you're taking care of your gut, you'll be amazed how much better you can feel. Here's how. Start taking Cognibiotics, the breakthrough mood-enhancing formula made by Bioptimizers. Formula starts with a solid foundation of prebiotics and probiotics to support gut health. And it does not stop there. Cognibiotics also includes 17 powerful herbs that are thought perhaps to enhance mood, manage stress, improve memory. If you think about it, Cognibiotics is also like two supplements in one because it supports your brain health through two different channels. And here's the best part. Cognibiotics comes with a one-year full money-back guarantee. So I encourage you to try it risk-free and see for yourself. Simply go to cognibiotics.com/Drew and use Dr. Drew to receive 10% off any order. Again, that is Cognibiotics, C-O-G-N-I, like cognition, C-O-G-N-I-B-I-O-T-I-C-S, cognibiotics.com/Drew. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Dr. Drew podcast. Do keep the winds in the sail of the Corolla Pirate Ship. We do appreciate that. Support those that support us. We do try to check, I'm very careful with who we allow to support us. So we hope that you get the most out of that and support them so we can continue this thing. Also, do check out drdrew.tv where you can see all the streaming shows we're doing, drdrew.tv. And also, if those of you who have not headed over to your mom's house for the After Dark show, you are missing out. So I suggest you do so. Today, our guest is a returning guest, Dr. Lisa Strohman. Her last appearance here was episode 169 in 2015. I can't believe it's been that long.
Oh, no, I did another one. I've been on Vice. It was 169 and then 269.
269. There we go. She knows. I was going to say, how could it have been 6 years ago? That's nuts. Her upcoming book is Digital Distress, Navigating the Digital Age, coming out shortly. And the other book that is out, Unplug, Raising Kids in a Technology-Addicted World. Dr. Strohman is an expert in these areas. We're going to talk all about it, and you can hear more at her podcast, The Point, with Lisa Strohman. Lisa, welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Of course, the Twitter is at
always a good time.
At Dr. Lisa Strohman, Strohman, and website is drlisastrohman.com. And so one of the reasons, amongst others, that I wanted you back is that I'm just hearing nightmarish stories about particularly sort of 7 to 15-year-olds in this age of no school and lockdown. And of course, they're locked down with their screens, which is your area of expertise and is making things that much worse. What are you seeing out there clinically?
Clinically, it's a pretty big mess. We've got kids that, from a standpoint of school settings, are handing them devices that previously, when they were on campuses, were able to be locked down by the campus, like internet service or the school system. But, you know, in this rush to get kids access to education, they handed out all these digital devices, and there is absolutely no way for them to monitor those in the home environment. So it's really striking to me, like, how much has changed, because you're seeing, in some regards, 185% increase, let's say, in just one category of inappropriate photos, you know, sexting with one another. And that's just, and that goes all the way down to like third and fourth grade.
Slow down. Give us that data specifically. So you're seeing almost a 200% increase in this behavior of sending explicit images of one another, right?
Correct.
Down to age 9, 8?
Yes. Yeah. We're seeing it in the elementary schools where we hadn't seen that before, because I think a lot of those kids didn't have access And they, at that point, you know, the parents were probably able to protect them a little bit more. But with parents now virtual, kids now virtual, there's just really nobody watching over anyone. And so it's really messy, and it's terrifying to me, like the mental health consequences of it all.
So I just want to get into the behavior for a second, because it's so shocking to me. And are any of this being prosecuted as trafficking child porn?
Yes. So I've been working with investigators out of Canada. I've got a couple of investigators, one in Atlanta, one in Florida now. But there is definitely an increase now of looking at the exploitation. It's pretty crazy how open they are in doing it out online. I mean, it's like they don't have to hide anymore, because you've got TikTok, you've got Snapchat, like you have all of these platforms out there where parents feel guilty that their kids are isolated. And they're like, well, we don't want you to be, you know, totally completely without friends, so we're going to let you go onto these apps. And it's just crazy, crazy, because it's this open market for these predators to go after our kids.
And how, what, but I'm still zeroing in on the fact that 9-year-olds are sending, I don't know, understand how a 9-year-old does sexting or understands what sexting is. What do they think they're doing? Or they don't know. They're just doing something they've seen online.
So a lot of them are like viral challenges. So one that's really exciting, I say with heavy sarcasm, who know me, is the Dare Me challenge. So they pop on and they're like, dare me to do anything. And that obviously goes really bad really quickly, particularly with young kids in the room. So a lot of times you'll see these younger kids might have older siblings, or again, like I tell parents this all the time, if you're going to let your kids on social media, you just have to be prepared for them to be presented with sexual content. 100%. They are going to see sexualized content the minute you hand them access into the social media world.
At any age.
That's just the reality.
At any age.
Like, yeah. I mean, that's what you're going to see on Snapchat Discover, because it's what sells ads.
Do we know the impact of that yet, or have any measurements of anything?
Yeah. I mean, what we see, there's this district up in Chicago. I have a call with them this afternoon. They've had 40 suicides. So we're seeing a lot of kids that are in lower SES communities where families are impacted, that they're making these choices. And so, of course, forensically, we can go in and look at their digital footprint after the fact and recognize that they've gotten themselves into drugs or into sexting or into some sort of exploitation where they just don't see a way out.
In other words, they get taken advantage of somebody, then they feel guilty, and then they feel ashamed, and they feel trapped and depressed and scared. And of course, that age group, they have the magical thinking that this is some sort of rational way of getting out, right?
Yeah. Well, and I think, you would have to weigh in on this too, like the hormonal aspect of kids, like they're eating more. I took my daughter to the pediatrician today, and she's like, it's so crazy. She's grown 2.5 inches in less than, it's been a year. And she said that across the board, kids are growing faster. They're eating more. They have more hormonal like impact on them because of the foods that they're eating. So I don't know like from the medical standpoint of that, but it's from a mental health standpoint, you think about just even how diet is impacting them.
Well, so I wonder, I'll tell you the other thing that happens that I've seen is accelerated maturation in times of extreme distress. I mean, you see prepubertal changes and things very early in highly distressed populations. So I'm wondering if this growth is some sort of bone plate phenomenon that's related to the stress, not to the food. You know,
interesting.
I mean,
yeah.
if they're also seeing not pubertal changes but prepubertal changes, that's a sign that all that is going on.
So that's definitely our case.
Yeah. So shit, that just means that the being at home is so distressing. It's such a threat. I mean, from an evolutionary biological standpoint, humans reproduce in times of plenty and times of threat. So if it's a distressed, threatening times, they want to get to their reproductive capacity and reproduce quick, right? So the species goes on. And that's what the biology does. And same in time of plenty, you want to reproduce a lot because there's plenty to go around, and so you can accommodate reproduction. But man, that's bad news to me. That is just awful.
Well, it's terrible news for in my world of mental health, because I think that a lot of times we're looking at it, we're like, oh, you know, this is, we're going to have a COVID slide. You know, kids are going to lose about a year of education. Sheesh. You know, we'll rebound. Ugh. But I'm looking at the mental health, and we're looking at 3 to 5 years of impact trauma. And in some cases, we may not be able to walk it back.
In a way,
how do you take it away?
Yeah, I was going to say, in a way, this early maturation is like looking at the rings on a tree. You know what I mean? There's a drought, and then there's rain, and the rings change from a standpoint of the growth and maturation of the tree. Humans do the same thing. Humans do the same thing. And so that is just ugh. And then, of course, they're heading into these reproductive biologies before their frontal lobes are ready, and they're being exposed to all this shit online. Wow. And they're having delayed cognitive development because they're not in school. How do we recover this generation? How do we help them get back from this? It's almost like a war. It's like a war kind of.
Right. And that's not even taking into consideration the parents that are, you know, I've got a 12 and a 13 year old. I know yours are older, but it's stressful. Like, you, I mean, you're
what?
in a household with kids that may not want to be there with you.
Right. So. Maybe not. Yeah. Well, yeah. We have no idea what the impact of all that is. Right. I mean, some parents are more adaptive and more able to teach, and others, it's not their suit. It's not their strong suit. I couldn't have done it. We Susan and I look at each other all the time and just go, oh my God, thank God we're not trying to do this. I mean, really, triplets, 7-year-olds or 8-year-olds or 10-year-olds, like, it just takes our breath away even to think about it. Gary, you're having a reaction.
It's all ages. I mean, my kid can't go do things that normal kids can do. He's never been to a mommy and me class. My kid's 18 months, Lisa, and he's doing, I'm very glad he's not 7. I'm very glad he's not 14. My nephew's 14. That's a nightmare, but it's affecting him too. We go to the grocery store and he sees another kid that's around his age. He freaks out because he wants to go play. And it's not happening. It's awful.
We have no.
What is the social implications of that?
We don't even know. We don't know.
Right.
And I mean, I guess you could look at it and go, well, you know, human families have been isolated in previous periods of history and stuff. It's like, yeah. I imagine that had consequences too. We just didn't measure it. So let's go back to the mental health consequences. So you've mentioned suicide. We know that drug overdoses are way up. A friend of mine, Laura Berman, just lost her son on a fentanyl overdose through Snapchat.
I did read that.
Yeah. Talk about that phenomenon for a second, because it didn't surprise me. It surprised me it happened to her, but it didn't surprise me that is happening.
So I think that when you look at, you have almost a 60% increase. If I shot you over some stats that I have from a partnership I have with education, but you see about a 60% increase in kids, even just talking about drugs online. So when you talk about what, unfortunately, with Dr. Berman's son, a lot of times the parents go in and say, oh, because they have access to Snapchat, that's why my kid is access to this. Well, it's not really entirely the whole picture, because what Snapchat affords is a platform where you have this world of nefarious dealers that go in, and the kids call them plugs. I should say we call them, but they're called plugs. And so they talk about them in ways that adults don't know, and they don't know how to track it. I say that maybe parents don't know how to track it. Those of us that are in the world, like, you look at hashtags and it'll say bars, perks, and anything you want, you can put in there, a Molly, and you put, use a hashtag, and those plugs go in, and a kid, all he has to do is throw a snap up, put it in a story, and it goes out and it gets distributed, and then they come back and then they hook up, and the plugs will actually go and deliver it straight to your house.
Wow.
So it is so freaking easy for these kids to get drugs nowadays that, it's the number one thing I say to parents that are struggling with kids with addiction. I say, throw away the phone.
What does plug stand for?
A drug dealer.
But I mean,
is a plug.
It's not an acronym. Like, to say, like, I've got a plug. It's like, I've got a hookup.
It's just,
I've got a hookup.
It's a dealer. It's just
a name that got caught on. Wow. God only knows what adult addicts are doing.
Well, so, I mean, I think you and I had an offline conversation where I've got a doc that I see who's, you know, gone through the full program. He's been sober for like 28 years. Everything's great. And he was like, during the pandemic, he was like, yeah, I was kind of thinking like mushrooms might be a thing to try for my depression. And I was like, yeah, do you remember who you are?
Remember your condition?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I think it's, you know, we're feeling lonely. And so I feel so fortunate because in this partnership with Gaggle, I'm able to go in and look at the numbers. Those are the numbers I just sent you. They go back and
can I tweet these numbers?
Sure.
They're pretty disturbing.
Yeah. But Gaggle is, they look at educational. That is K through 12.
Wow.
So if, and that's, those are the schools that have their content. So they go through and they scan Microsoft Teams, they go through Google Classroom. And so that's not even looking at their social. Those are the numbers of the kids that are actually using academic platforms to talk about this stuff.
Wow.
So in their world, they've had to shift employees. So most of these kids now, instead of going to bed at around 11 at night, are up until 4 in the morning. So they've had to shift their employment hours for their oversight world in order to be able to watch these kids in the middle of the night. It's pretty crazy the amount of changes that, that are happening behind the scenes in order to keep up with what these kids are talking about.
Say that again. Who is having to stay up all night?
So Gaggle is the company that I work with.
Yeah.
And Gaggle they basically have a safety monitoring team. And so they have AI that comes in and they look for key terms and things like that. And then that goes to a real person and the real person identifies and views it. And if it's a real-time threat where a kid's saying they're going to kill themselves or hurt themselves or cut themselves, that alert goes out to the adults that are attached to that account, as well as typically in most cases to a law enforcement partner.
Jeez.
Because we can't keep up with it. I mean, I just sent you these numbers because I thought you should know this. 83% increase in self-harm and suicide. And that's the difference between pre-pandemic, post-pandemic in that same season. That's an incredibly high increase in that same time period.
It's awful. And that's only the stuff on the academic platforms. God only knows what's out on social.
Right. And so what we're finding is, you know, part of the issue that I see is that these alerts go to academic like the principals, counselors, things like that. Then it goes to the parents. And do you have a parent that is equipped to handle that? So for me to get plugged in mental health, it's like 8 steps out. So the kids, even if they're identified, it's still hard to get to them in time.
Well, I was going to say, if you see any of these things, it's not a parenting issue. This is what I think parents don't understand. It's now a medical problem, a mental health problem, right?
It becomes a mental health problem, correct.
Yeah, you're not going to parent your way out of this, which I think that's what they believe they're able to do.
Right. Well, and that goes to, there was an article that came out today, and you know I've been talking about this for about 10 years, but Snapchat they just came out and they said the Snap Discover is very similar to our Facebook, Instagram, all of that, where it's curated content. So the Snapchat algorithms figure out what they want the kids to see or not see. And so what it tells me is that we as a society have decided if our kids are on social media, that content is going to be more influential than parents and it's going to be more influential than teachers.
Sheesh.
So that is where they're getting their news. That is where they're getting their advice. I've got a 28-year-old that came to me and he's like, I've been getting my therapy off of TikTok because there's a therapist that posts this. And he said, and this is what he said on TikTok. And I was like, yeah, that's not right. That's like completely wrong. It's like the opposite. You know, basically it's alienating him from his parents.
Oh.
And it was because it's bad advice. But because he's on TikTok and he's got a degree, he's like, well, I thought that maybe I should listen to him. Well, maybe not, you know. But I think that you're in that world. I think that, right? Like you probably have talked about this where he's in that world where he grew up with it and without it in some respects.
Yeah. I'm definitely a weird in between where, you know, cell phones were not omnipresent in my childhood, but I've watched the entire evolution and now I'm starting to feel old and disconnected from my nephew who's 14 and is just doing different things. I still stay up on it, but I'm not into the Snapchat world the way he is.
I don't think you can, you know, I'm a parent that didn't grow up in it because I'm older than you. And I've chosen to raise my kids and educate them on why these things are dangerous and not give them access as young children, elementary school children, because regardless of the fact that everybody else, and I'm the worst parent in the world, so let them have access to it. You know, now my daughter in eighth grade is literally probably one of the most normative eye contact, you know, kids that the teachers are like, she's a pleasure to have in class. She's engaging. She has conversations. And it's, you can just see the difference between the kids that are with and those are without.
I'm just thinking about your daughter. I mean, how many other kids are there that don't have access to, you know, social media? You're the only one that I know of. You know what I mean?
Well, it's interesting. Like, so I've been doing the DCA program, Digital Citizen Academy program. Our elementary school had it. So all of her peers have had it since first grade. And six out of seven of her friends at this, her table that she sits at, none of those parents, none of those kids have social media.
Oh.
Whereas the three other elementary schools, which did not go through education and information and training, those kids typically have it. So we're looking at, to me, I think fundamentally it's a parent education piece. And then a portion of it is give the kids a voice, empower them to understand what this could do and what it can't do for them.
So I tweeted your data and now people are freaking out. What shall I post as the source?
Gaggle. Yeah. So if you put at Gaggle, that's their handle.
At G-A-G?
G-L-E. Yeah. Like a gaggle of geese.
Two G's?
G-A-G-G-L-E.
What I've got is gaggle underscore K-12. Is that them?
Is that on, what are you tweeting? Twitter. You're on, yeah, that's them. That would be them. Yep.
Yeah, that's them. I just confirmed it. While Drew does that, Lisa, what do you think about the recent documentary that's been getting a lot of play on Netflix, The Social Dilemma? Is that something that you've viewed?
Yes, I viewed that one, and I think it's incredibly helpful to understand. I've actually watched it twice. Because of course I'm the nerd that goes in and fact checks like what these founders are, you know, now have come to realize. So, Tristan Harris, who came out and, you know, did this fundamental, you know, Jerry Maguire moment and said how awful everything was and presented his argument to his world.
This was not the guy on the source on the documentary, right?
No, it is.
It is the guy. Yeah,
this is the guy who was the sales. He was the marketing guy.
Yes, he was, and he's subsequently done a 3-hour Rogan podcast. That's very
impactful.
A lot more. There's a lot more back and forth. You know, someone's able to ask him questions. And Lisa, by the way, I know you're the nerd who goes and fact checks. That's exactly why I asked you.
Well, so I went and looked, and so he presented that in like 2016, but then he stayed 3 years. You know, kind of got his exit and like all of those kind of things, which is, I get it, you know, but all of those guys went through the world, made those differences, made a bunch of money, then started having kids. I think Tristan doesn't have kids, but then started having kids or families. And then they were like, oh, wait, maybe this isn't great. So when I look at it, I think it's interesting that this, I know that we've talked about this before, but I feel like you've got this very young tech entrepreneur who's starting out with this idealistic view of like, oh, this would be really great if we could connect everybody in the world, and didn't think about it getting out of control.
Right.
So I think that I tell everybody to watch Social Dilemma. And then another one I would say to add to that is Fake Famous. And if you have not seen that, it's on HBO right now. It is terrifying at how realistic and like the influencer world is in terms of how seriously curated and fake it is.
Is that a scripted thing, or is it a documentary style?
It's a documentary. Yeah. It's Nick Bilton, he's a journalist who he's written on tech for years, all the major magazines. But he basically said, let's do a social experiment. We're going to take three people who are unknown, and we're going to buy them followers, and we're going to buy them content iterations, and we're going to show that we can take a nobody and we can make them an influencer and make them famous.
Ugh.
And then
on the HBO Now.
That's on HBO Max, which is that I'm reading the synopsis here, which Lisa just explained very well. It looks fascinating. I mean, terrifying. Terrifying.
I always walk away with a chill feeling when I talk to Lisa about this stuff. I mean, I don't mean chill, relaxed. I mean like a chill down my spine. Like, shit, it's still getting away from us. It's still.
How do you think I feel? Your kids are well adjusted and pretty much adults.
Who knows what? Yeah, they are adults, but who knows what this is?
I will make my judgment from the outside. They seem very well adjusted and proficient to me.
But they didn't have this back then. They really didn't. They. I can tell you what they were exposed to was E-Bombs World. I remember that. Yep. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And Homestar Runner, which I thought was good enough. That was fine. And then MySpace came in.
Yeah.
And we monitored that very carefully and had some issues with it, but that wasn't as uncontrolled as all this. So,
well, I think, I mean, for me, like you look at, and Gary, here's some like silver lining and hopefully it calms Drew down a little bit. My kids grew up in this world where they were handed devices and access to technology in the school system, you know, in kindergarten.
Yes.
And from my perspective as a parent, like they, ABC Mouse, like all of those, like Learn to Read, all of those apps that are on there, my kids participated in them. I let them participate in those educational softwares because that's a good interaction with technology. We're using it as tools. The minute that they only did the activity because they wanted the sticker, it became gambling and I turned it off.
Wow. So
the minute your kid realizes it, and the game is up and it's not because they're enjoying the art or they're enjoying learning their letters or they're participating in it that way, that's the minute you should turn it off. Cause that's when you can just see it happen. If you're a parent, and I know, you know, as you've got an 18 month old, so I always say nothing before age two, hopefully, but it's, you can see it happen. And that's most parents, I think, want to do the right thing, but they just don't know. And that's been my
push. It's hard, especially if you have multiple kids. I mean, you're fighting a force.
Yeah, I'm lucky to just have the one so far. So it's sort of, you know, a team defense, you know, two on one, which helps.
I know. We were in zone all the time.
I can't imagine.
Three on two.
God, you had to have been in prevent half the time. Just trying to keep them alive.
No, that's exactly it's exactly what it was.
I know. I can see it without experiencing it.
Yeah. And if it was three on one, forget it.
Oh.
Just forget it. We would do that occasionally. I did that once and there was an earthquake. And you think, oh, shit. Oh. And their play area was by a chimney. And I'm literally gathering three, probably one-year-olds at the time, and running out into this backyard.
Oh,
oh my God. So anyway, I don't want to think about that. I get PTSD.
You just started sweating.
I get, there's so much happened to us. I can't believe we got through it. Anyway. Did you know that aging actually begins in our cells? Of course, the cells age. That's us aging. Many aspects of our daily life can influence how well our trillions of cells perform and, of course, then how we age. Age-associated cellular decline, or AACD, is a time-related deterioration in the way our cells function as we age, beginning in our 40s and accelerating in our 60s. Over time, our cellular process becomes less efficient, which can contribute to things like fatigue, reduced muscle strength, and impaired cellular defenses. To help address these changes, try incorporating nutrients that work on a cellular level into your wellness routine. Celltrient Cellular Nutrition is a breakthrough with a range of nutritional products with cellular nutrients to target cellular performance. Celltrient is the first brand to provide a range of cellular nutrients, including nicotinamide riboside, urolithin A, glycine, and N-acetylcysteine, all help prevent key sources of AACD. Visit celltrient.com for more info. I take them every day, and you can find out which Celltrient product is right for you. Use code DrDrew10 for a 10% discount. You've heard me talk about our friends at BetterHelp. That's right. Therapy can be exactly what you want it to be, in fact. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. and it's much more affordable than in-person therapy. You can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. Join the millions of people who are seeing what therapy is really about. It may or may not be for you, but it's worth looking into because you are your greatest asset. I have been significantly impressed by BetterHelp, the BetterHelp therapist, the results they get. I've referred family there, referred patients there, and I'm consistently happy with the services at BetterHelp. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and the Dr. Drew podcast listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/Drew. Again, that is Better, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/Drew. But I think it's all you're talking about raises all my anxiety about childbearing, right? Even though I went through it before all this, I was an anxious parent. And so I can relate how overwhelming this must be for people that are trying to fight this back. And I really worry about the unknown effect of all the sexualization. It just we just don't know what that's doing to people's brains.
Well, I think I guess the argument would be we know a lot if you look at the research on porn, right? So if you look at the research on porn and how that impacts the brain, and you look at the fact that it stunts development, that I mean, I've had 20-something-year-olds that can't get erections because they've been watching porn too long.
Right, so, right. But that's, you know, but again, let's to me, that's an obvious thing, which is you get exposed too early, it hyperarousal, you get locked in, you get addicted. That's an easy one. But just looking at these images that are so – it just shatters the upper limits of the brain's capacity to regulate, right? And as it is, you know, I've had an opinion that sort of males particularly get wired into images really between like 11 and 13, 11 and 14. You agree with me?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. And if it was Playboy, like back in our day, it's like it's still in your head. I mean, you hear Adam talk about it. He's 55 years old. He talks. He has the names of the women he was looking at when he was 12. He remembers it.
Of course he does. Yeah.
Yes. You know what I mean? And he's not – I mean, it's a little exceptional, but not that unusual. But imagine now what they're looking at. It's just like, what does that do to them? What does that do to their sense of physical intimacy and relationships and what they're looking for? It's just – and satisfaction and arousal and all that stuff is just being altered, it seems to me. And I just don't know – I just don't know what it's going to do to relationships. I don't know.
Well, that coupled with what you're – sorry to interrupt, Lisa. But I think, Drew, it's not only that, but it's that coupled with what your sons are experiencing right now, which is they're terrified. No one, they don't want to be bad guys.
Right. So one aspect is, fuck this, I'm out. Right? That's one potential response. Another is, oh, I get that that's not real. That's bad. What is real and good? I don't want to see be a bad dude. I want people to think good of me. And oh, by the way, I don't want to be me too. And I don't want to be a part of that. I want to be, you know, empathic and attuned. And how do you do that? I'm scared. And there's even – now, I spoke to a woman named Deborah Soh, S-O-H. This is – let me say, this is not my opinion. This is not my opinion, but this is an opinion that is out there and a scientific observation that she has made that a certain percentage of female to male identified transgender did so – were aware that that phenomenon took hold in them after watching aggressive porn and going, I don't want to be a female anymore. I don't want anything to do with that. It's not my opinion. Not my opinion. I don't know if that has scientifically sound, if that's been resubstantiated or not. But we're just talking about the impact on the brain. And much like many other experiences in childhood, whatever it does to your development, that's your development. Okay, fine. But isn't that interesting that that's – you know, we don't know the full spectrum of the impact of watching this porn.
Well, I guess my argument would be that if I look at the relationships – because I'm in the weeds with these kids. There is so much polyamorous, polysexual openness in this generation, the Gen Z generation that's coming up specifically, that sex is almost just a normative commodity to them. So can I get a ride home? Sure, if you give me a hand job, okay. Like, and so this whole Me Too movement that I feel like a lot of women felt empowered by, and that like we can finally get some grounding, is being eradicated by this younger generation that has been, you know, that's being raised on the, on this concept that sex isn't really a big deal. And that's the, that's what I see clinically happening. And when I talk to kids that even aren't patients that are just like, yeah, it's not really that big of a deal. It's just sex.
And is that a defensive posture? Is that a universal feeling, or is it, you know, some kids that that's their feeling and others it's a little bit more ambivalent?
Yeah, I think it's, I think the, it gives them attention. And I think that it's it what draws it. It's what can draw a crowd in some respects, right? I think it's very popular. It's actually popular to be a victim. So there's, I've got a ton of boys that are being accused of sexual assaults that have never happened, where I've got girls that are very good friends with the other girl. And those friendships are falling apart because they're like, that never happened. She hooked up with him at a party in the room we were in. And it, we saw it happen in front of them. And then 3 days later, it's like, oh no, I'm a sexual assault victim. And I want to, I want people to come to my aid. And that, that scares me because then now we're talking about things that aren't real. That,
but also it also implies that they don't understand the impact of sexual behavior. That, that maybe,
right. They're too young or they're not.
Right.
Yeah.
So she, I'm going to bet the woman, the girl actually did feel assaulted, but didn't understand what she was engaged with, and then afterwards did feel assaulted.
Well, and so, okay, so let's go down that rabbit hole of when do you make that determination? So if you're engaged in a sexual experience, and so, and I've got a lesbian client who's had this situation happen, and now she's been told by a peer group that she's a rapist and that she sexually assaulted someone, and she's had to go to re-education on, ugh. There's a book that she's had to read, Sexual Citizens, which is terrifying if you want to read that, about how the population inside of school campuses just create this mass like sexual assault that kids can do. But
what?
But in the reality, yeah, that basically they're saying like that the dorms are set up for sexual assaults to run rampant, and that's on us as the people who developed them, that we're not protecting them. And I'm not through the book, so I'm, but it's terrifying as a mom of a girl, and it's and I've got one girl, one boy. So I'm terrified for my daughter. And I'm also very now clear that I have to have really strong conversations with my sons or my son, like you've had to have with your sons.
Isn't it that it's not, sex is not just a commodity. It's not just basic. People have all kinds of very intense reactions to it. And don't they need that message?
I mean, yeah,
if
I
all
mean,
they get
I
is that people,
so.
If all they get is that people feel victimized and don't understand they're going to feel victimized, that should be enough to call them off a little bit. No.
I mean, but it goes back to like, it's not enough to be able to say like, I had this relationship with a kid and it didn't work out.
Right.
And if it didn't work out, like you have to identify it as deeper than that. And you have to come out with a story. Because, and this is just me attaching the social training that happens online,
yeah.
Is that if you don't have enough following and you don't have enough people liking, or you don't have enough people paying attention to you, like you're going to try to get that.
Yep.
And so I'm not claiming that no one is getting assaulted. And I'm not saying that doesn't ever happen, but I'm saying, I'm curious as to whether or not like developing these stories that do gain that attention, even if it's a secondary gain of sympathy, is being trained into these kids to start doing it. That's what it feels like to me from a clinical perspective.
And so how do we have this conversation without people canceling for saying that you're not, you know, you're normalizing victimization of girls and blah, 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 all that kind of stuff?
Who becomes the arbiter of who has been victimized?
Well, I think the easy thing is to start getting them to understand that sexuality has real consequences and that they need to be very sure about what they're doing. And it's not just a simple commodity. I mean, they need to dial it back, no?
They definitely need to dial it back, and again, this goes back to, you need to pay attention, because if you, like, my daughter is 13 and she's a young 13, right? Because she hasn't been sexualized by all this stuff. If you look at her soccer team, out of the 12 girls that are on it, five of them are very young and pretty innocent, And then the other seven, you can tell that have their, you know, shorts hiked up above their butt so you can see their butt cheeks hanging out. You can see their, the videos that come out with them like dancing and like gyrating to various things. And they're 13.
The same age.
Yeah. And so it's, you've got this massive break. And then, you know, my world, you know, working now with Gaggle has been amazing. Like 11-year-olds that are offering sex in the bathroom. Ew. Like that should never be happening.
Well, I keep seeing that we need to really, this idea of sexuality being healthy and free is great, but that there's major consequences that have got to be communicated to young people. And it doesn't sound like we're doing that.
No. And in fact, we're terrified to. I mean, if I'm in, we've had a ton of people move here from California, shockingly, recently.
What? Amazing.
And those parents are telling me that they're, you know, one of the parents told me that my line was that I had to sign a waiver in a class that I wasn't, that my child wasn't going to be racist, homophobic, something like there's a bunch of like things that the kid, that the parents and the kid had to sign in order to return to, I think it was like a social studies class. And he was like, I don't even know how to talk to my 10-year-old about this, let alone have him sign like a contract binding him to this concept right now. So you're right. We need to learn how to have conversations about it and learn how to deeply as families. I think it goes back to what are we going to have influencing our kids? Do you want somebody else to teach our kids these values, or does it come from our family and come from who we are? Internally, and that's
well, but of course, every family wants to be the source of this. But you're making an important point, which that there are these social forces out there that are shaping how young people behave and how they think they should behave. It's not their fault. It's just this is what they're exposed to, and so they're building these sense of human relating that has it's incomplete, and of course, it's incomplete because they're so young. And again, we have no – just to imagine being that age and being exposed to all this stuff on social media, and it'd be just so confusing. And then at the same time, you know, the hormonal motivate, you know, the motivational states that they're going into are – I don't know why God did that. He did it way too young, especially to the males particularly are overwhelmed by what they're dealing with. And we need to help them sort of channel and contain this stuff, which is what most of human history has been about, is it not?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a huge part of who we are as humans. I mean, that's a biological drive in us, that in that hormonal piece of, to your point, puberty plus a little testosterone is messy. And estrogen with like this massive, I mean, there's so much drama in the girls' brains. Like, I don't know how you contain that now when you have kids that are at home and maybe the parents aren't there and they're on their own with, I've got one family that's got four kids and the 14-year-old's in charge. there's not a lot of oversight there. And you've got a 14-year-old that's super hormonal and interested in like having a life socially and a 7-year-old that needs somebody to help them make good choices at home. And it's hard.
Is there, let's just sort of approach this maybe from a slightly different position, which is there a world where the companies are held responsible for the consequences on kids' survival?
You mean the tech companies?
Yeah, or some of these platforms or something where they can be held, I don't know.
It's going to have to go there. I think I've been talking a lot about the congressional oversight and look at Section 230 is the one that you're probably looking at, which doesn't apply to child exploitation. So there's no reason why they have been protected from that liability thus far. But I think that you're going to have to definitely hold that somebody has to be held accountable for not going in and, for instance, deleting out plug and hashtag bar and hashtag Molly and, you know, like all of the stuff that we know that the kids are using to transmit information that's going to be negatively impacting them. We should probably turn that off.
Probably. Why not?
Right?
Yeah. Why don't we probably do that? So for people that don't know, Dr. Stroman is also an attorney. And so you're the perfect person to be involved in these cases when they develop, right?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, that's one of the investigators I'm working with. That's part of what we're looking at is, do we, I've been saying this for a long time, it's big tobacco all over again. And it's not as simple. I try to explain this to people. When we created Section 230 congressionally to protect a brand new baby internet to start off, which made sense at the time. And it was, there's a couple of big lawsuits against Prodigy and CompuServe at the time. And so they came in, they're like, oh gosh, like if we allow these people to get sued, we'll never, the internet will never take off. So I get that. But now you're at a point where 20 years later and billions of dollars into it that they've made, and they're managing and curating and controlling the narratives in so many different realms for our children's education, for political discourse, for global economies. Like, okay, so if we just shut that off and we say, okay, we're going to take that away. Let's just pretend we did that. Simple solution. Now we have no competitor that comes into the world that can compete against a company that has billions of dollars of, I guess, a head start. So nobody would be able to be in that same scope.
Well, they could at the same time break them apart, I guess, right?
Right, which seems like it's a little bit more likely. Yeah. I think that in some respects it's already happening. I don't know if you know, Facebook has a European different content rules that are over there. Yeah. So in Europe, they have the right to be forgotten, for instance, where if you have something that's posted about you online and it's damaging, untrue, hurtful, it was a mistake. Yeah, you can write in, you can lobby, and you can say, I'd like this removed. And wow. As long as it wasn't something illegal,
imagine that.
It's deleted. Jesus. How about that?
That'd be crazy. That seems like just something like that would be a sufficient model to take out harmful stuff. Wouldn't that be interesting?
So it is not, it's super interesting. And the fact is that because Silicon Valley and the tech industries are housed in the US and their lobbying dollars are so expansive, it's really hard to get that same law for our citizens.
Wow.
But it would be amazing and it would change lives. I think we would have less suicides, less self-harm.
Well, let's go
for
do
sure,
that.
Less overdoses.
Let's go do that. How do we?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Help me understand how to make a public, some sort of slogan that we can rally around that helps people easily understand what this is. You know, like a sentence that here's what we need to do. Boom.
Right. I'll do it. Let's do it.
I'm looking for you to do that because I'll get behind that. That's my new homelessness thing. Because there's stuff that needs to change out in the world, and this could make a big difference for people. So I'm deadly serious about this. I really want to try.
No, I'm in.
Yeah, because it seems like I have felt helpless with what's going on in the world in on the internet. But you tell me it sounds like this has very specific solutions associated with it, and I'm all about it. How has the lockdown been for you personally?
It's interesting. I'm more of a social person, I like connection with people. I'm a hugger. I'm that person who I want to help people. And so being locked away is really hard. My son is very much like me, and my husband and my daughter, like the pandemic was like made for us. They're super happy being home and, doesn't want it to change. So it's been challenging because we have half and half. Yeah.
Yuck. I've hated the lockdown. I've hated it. Gary, you with me on this?
I'm 100% with you, but I'm also, it sounds like I have a mix of what Dr. Stroman's household is like, because, we announced three or four weeks ago, outdoor dining was back in SoCal, and I was like, let's go. My wife didn't bring it up.
So, and you're in Orange County. I go down to Orange County to have some, pretend life.
It's been more or less. Compared to L.A., it's been on in Orange County this whole time.
Even down there, it's not that on. I go down there to sort of have a facsimile of a life.
Yeah, it's definitely not normal in Orange County. And there was a few weeks there where they started to pretend to be normal, and then things started spiking and everyone calmed down. But
I was at the restaurant where you had I know exactly when that week was because I was in Orange County and I was at the restaurant where you had your rehearsal dinner.
Yeah,
and it was a bar, and the bar was on. And we were like sort of mortified because people are coming up. They're drunk talking in your face. And we thought, oh, no more.
That doesn't have to do with the pandemic. That's just that city.
That's that restaurant too. But
that restaurant.
But we were aware. We thought, oh, it's on. You know, we're going to go out. And then we thought, no.
They went way too hard. And so
a lot of, and by the way, just as an aside, a lot of what's happening now in many states. So my son just drove across the country. And he said, you know, pretty much everyone's the same now. Whether the state is locked down or not, people are automatically reducing their social interaction. And they're not going indoors at restaurants and things to protect themselves. That humans do that. And that makes perfect sense to me. And there were a friend of mine, a guy named Dr. Brilliant, a friend of mine wrote a paper that said something like, you know, locking down is not about the state or something. It's that you can – people automatically adjust their behavior when there's threat. Like, everybody. We're not dumb, you know. But anyway.
But unfortunately, the
lockdown makes a certain population push against and not being willing to do the things that are sensible, which is, you know – what's that, Lisa?
Like teenagers and young adults. Yeah. I think I was watching the Super Bowl party and Tom Brady coming out of a bar.
Wasted.
And – you know, of course, trying not to get on tape, but nobody had masks and things like that. So I think that there's, you know, again, like there's like certain celebratory things that are happening on that. But I think my bigger fear is like, how do we, like Gary's wife, like my husband, it's like people are getting really used to being at home and remote calling in. And I think that you're starting to see people like, can we just do our business this way? And so, you know, you're going to see a pretty big shift, I think, for those people that have figured out remote working, that they don't want to go back and they don't want to be in front of people.
Yeah, but there'll be a mix. Those like you and me and Gary, I'm going to be out there. We're going
to
be in it.
100%. But to Lisa's point, like, you know, especially with the ambiguity around, you know, the virus and the way it flows, I don't know what the standard is going to be for my wife, where she's like, okay, let's go back to normal life. Like, I don't know what that number is. That really scares me.
And what if a variant shows up that starts spreading quickly?
Exactly.
She'll shut back down again.
Right.
Yeah. That's the part about going forward that is a little unknown.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how that's exactly going to work. And I do not want this thing again. I assure you.
And to be clear, I don't want it either. And I'm also, you know, like you and me and Lisa, we're all very social, but I want to be social with my wife. Like, I actually like my wife.
Yeah.
We're still sort of new in our marriage. I want to live with my family, and it's tough.
Thank God Susan and I are the same that way, so that's good. Well, I'm welcoming back Dr. Noelle Reed. She's a board-certified family medicine physician, consulting physician for Celltrient Cellular Nutrition. You heard she and I talking recently about Celltrient, going to Celltrient.com and getting more information there if you guys were interested. I hope you were, because cellular aging, cellular senescence, that is what you're looking at on the outside when things started breaking down. And I have actually had my eye on many of these compounds for quite some time, and some of them I take and have taken on a regular basis. So let me bring Dr. Reed back in to tell you about Celltrient Strength. Talk to us about that.
Sure. Thanks for having me again, Dr. Drew.
You bet.
Cellular Celltrient Strength. I think we all know that as we get older, we kind of lose our pep in our step, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
Not as fast as maybe we used to be. And even when we're athletic and we do things, I'm a yogi. I do yoga 3-4 times a week. And still, there are days where I'm like, I need some energy.
Yes, I hear you.
And muscle stamina. And so I think that oftentimes we think that maybe we need more muscle mass, you know, in order to do better in terms of our function. But that's not necessarily the case. I think that we really need to also know what's happening at the cellular level, because it's not just the mass of the muscle, but how well those muscle cells are working. Okay,
So this is also part of age-associated cellular decline. Our mitochondria need a little boost.
Exactly. So when the mitochondria decline in each type of cell, you can imagine when that energy producer is not functioning as well, the cell doesn't function as well. So the tissues and organs that cell make up do not function at its peak level of performance. So deep inside our body, there are important natural processes that may become less efficient. And so one of these is the quality control process known as mitophagy. Okay. And so that's the recycling process of mitochondria, where underperforming mitochondria are removed from the cell and new ones are regenerated. And we know that we need efficient mitochondrial function in order for muscle strength to be at its peak level of performance. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah. They, instead of getting rid of the ones that are underperforming, and let's build up some new ones.
Exactly. And so there are certain cellular nutrients that can be helpful to allow for this process to work well and at its peak level performance. So yes, proper nutrition needs to be in place. We need to get in our micronutrients, so vitamins and minerals, and macronutrients, the proteins, carbs, fat that we need to meet our basic nutritional needs, but they have their limitations. They may not be able to penetrate at the cellular level and impact mitochondrial function, and that's where cellular nutrients come in, such as urolithin A. Have you heard of that before, Dr. Drew?
I have heard of that, actually. Tell us about it.
So urolithin A is actually a cellular nutrient that we do synthesize ourselves to a certain extent. So when we eat certain foods like pomegranates, berries, nuts, these foods contain a compound known as L-glutanins. And when the L-glutanins come in contact with our gut flora, the microbiome in our gut, urolithin A can be synthesized. However, only 1 in 3 adults have the right microbiome in order to produce the urolithin A that we need. And that's why supplementing can be very helpful and be the right choice to improve our overall mitochondrial function within our skeletal muscle cells.
Is that the main ingredient of the Celltrient Strength, or are there other products, other elements there as well?
That is the main ingredient. So Celltrient Cellular Strength contains 500 milligrams of urolithin A, and that's the recommended daily dose. And so that can be achieved with 2 capsules daily or 2 drink mixes. So it comes in 2 forms, capsule or a mixed in powder form. And actually, there was a clinical trial that was published in 2019 that showed that 500 milligrams a day of urolithin A increased markers of metaphagy, that recycling process of mitochondria, in muscle cells in older adults. And then there was a second clinical trial that found in healthy middle-aged adults, also when they supplemented with 500 milligrams a day of urolithin A, improved hamstring muscle strength after 4 months of supplementation. So this has been clinically proven, this particular ingredient or this cellular nutrient, to improve overall function of muscle cells. Now, in the mixed powder form, just to mention, because you asked were there other ingredients.
Yes.
It does contain magnesium.
Okay.
And so we know that magnesium does play an essential role in regulating, contraction and relaxation of muscle.
Well, I am going immediately and going to start this because I need to see what happens to my squats. So thank you for that, Dr. Noel Reed. Visit Celltrient.com for more info and take a short quiz under the Find Your Celltrient tab to discover which Celltrient products fit your needs. I'm going to go do that right now. And then use that promo code DrDrew10 for 10% discount. Again, Celltrient.com. Find your Celltrient and then use the code DrDrew10 at checkout. But, at least I've got this long hauler stuff going on. It's just brutal, brutal, brutal. Right now I feel pretty good, but about 2 hours, who knows? You know, just all of a sudden I have to lie down.
Which is crazy because I think that when you look at, to me, like, again, I go towards the science. So yeah. I read some article about if you have to have a mammogram, you shouldn't do that if you've had COVID or you've had your vaccine. And so there's all these little nuances because apparently some nodules could be inflamed and I don't know. I look at it. I was like, all right, what's the N? How many people were tested? Is this real science? Because I don't believe anymore, even if it hits major news streams, that it's not an N of 6.
Yeah, don't believe anything. You have to. And one of the. And by the way, talking to some 15 to 16 year olds, one of the good thing that is coming out of that population is they know that everything in the media is bullshit, and that they have to really look at things objectively, carefully on their own. Now, of course, they will be sucked into stuff that's not true, but they're at least trying. They get it. They get that. I've seen heard a lot of that they're being trying to be careful collating information, which I see as very positive.
I see in about 87, there's some study that came out and said 87% of Gen Z is getting their news source from their social, either Insta or Snap. So to that point, it's they're being way more careful, but now they're going and they're listening to peer group or peer distribution age of information. And so that's not always great.
Right.
And,
what? 60-year-olds aren't a great source of information? Really?
Not always, yeah.
Shocking. Yeah, I spent – one of the weird neurological things I had from COVID is I would – I'd just be in a fog, and I would sit and scroll through TikTok for hours and not even aware that time was passing. I was just so out of it. But I got a pretty good exposure to what goes on there, which I'd never had before. I'd never really been on it, which was interesting.
What do you think of it?
I spent most of my time going down historical rabbit holes on the War of the Roses and the Plantagenet progression.
Hey, spoiler alert, that's not what most people are doing on TikTok.
I know, but that's what I did. That's what I did. It was so crazy. But I thought the fact that I could do that pretty easily, like that tells you how it gets getting sent to you pretty quick. Yeah.
You have a pretty very interesting TikTok stream.
Yeah, well,
compared to the rest of us.
Lot of British history and stuff. What else did I get into? Tap dancing. I went down a weird tap dancing hole.
My gosh.
And let's think. Musical composing. Like composing for musical theater. I was so out of it.
I can't even believe that's on TikTok, actually. Yeah. Like, I'm shocked.
Yeah, good. It's good stuff. Yeah. And by the way, and here's what I noticed, which was there are communicators. There are people that really know how to give you short little pieces of information that you can receive. And there are people that are giving you the same information. It's just like, it's not getting across. That was kind of fascinating to me. I thought about kind of communication and how that works, and particularly communication in short bites.
Did you get the renegade dance down?
Is that the TikTok dance? Is that dance?
Thank you, Gary.
Yeah. But there's another one out there. This one with the hands going by. What is that one called? but the one that was the original dance, right? Is that what you're talking about?
There's lots of dance. No, Renegade was a viral dance that
he's
going to
show
out.
Me this one.
Are you going to do it?
He's showing it to me on a. Oh yeah, yeah. I barely saw that one. I know what you're looking at. That didn't fit with the Plantagenet succession.
I was just going to say, you're flapping hands. Like, was that like your tap dancing? Did that?
There was a different. There's another one. There's another dance out there that you know what I'm talking about, where they do this.
Yeah, there. I don't know the name of it. But
that one for whatever reason is on my thread all the time.
Yeah, there's the dances kind of go in cycles, and there's always a new one. I would suggest that you next time you're over at the your mom's house studios, give your phone to Christina and let her search a few TikToks.
Yeah, no, but I know
that'll spice up your feed a bit.
I'm just telling you, she shows them to me. I don't know how she finds that disgusting stuff, but it's what we talk about.
Same way you find tap dancing. What do you mean?
I know.
How many times you have? I mean, where does she find those people? It's incredible what she comes up with. It's incredible.
It's so easy to
By the way, I was sitting there sick, feeling horrible. I didn't want to feel worse.
Aww.
I didn't want to be disgusted and nauseated and febrile and foggy. So, all right, we got to wrap this up. Kroll is going to be here in a minute. We got to do an Adam and Drew show. So, Lisa, as always, it's scary and a privilege and a pleasure to talk to you.
Always love talking to you.
Yeah, but we have a new objective, right?
Coming out of this. No, I wrote it down. Like, yeah. I'm absolutely.
I really would like to kind of keep this top of mind, because I've been swimming around. I keep hearing about the 230 initiative, stuff, and that they're going to eventually do something, and that there are armies of attorneys sort of ramping up and getting ready. But I don't hear anything specific, and so to put something at the point of the spear would be nice if we can really come up with something.
Yeah,
that gets people behind it.
There are definitely solutions out there, and we just have to push through. So,
all right. The recent book is Unplugged. The book coming up is Digital Distress, which is what I'm feeling right now. It's coming out soon. And in the meantime, if you want to hear more, go to The Point with Dr. Lisa Stroman and follow her on Twitter at Dr. Lisa Stroman. Are you putting up the gaggle stuff there? Am I following
you? Yes, I'll put it up.
Do I follow you?
While you're checking,
I hope so.
While Drew's checking for that, I'll just say, Lisa, I hope we have you back. But either way, watch out for your inbox in about 4 years when I start to deal with this. I'm sure I'll be berating you.
I will be there for you, Gary, anytime.
Hold on. I'm going to make sure. L-I-S-A Stroman. It's just one word. S-T-R-O-H-M-A-N, right? There it is. Okay. And I'm following. Okay, good. All right. We will talk to you all next time.
for call-in times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the swinging sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.